the OTB Podcast Network.
Yeah, you're very welcome along this Tuesday morning, I want to say, to OTB AM. We're here with you every morning from 7.30 until 9.30. And Owen Sheehan is with us as well. Owen, this is the first morning I've woken up, read the papers and gone, there's actually quite a lot of news today. There's quite a lot of stuff happening. And there's a sense of busyness. There's like proper conversations being had about what the future might look like. And that's the first time where the sports pages have seemed confident enough to have these conversations about a shared and imagined future.
It's good chat, actually. I'm not sure, am I just speaking for myself here, but I definitely think
over the first fortnight of this new normal that we're all living in, this new sort of hopefully temporary world we're living in, there's definitely a bit of, you kind of freeze when you start thinking about sport a little bit. It's actually kind of hard to think about sport in a coherent manner. And I don't know what the reason for that is. Like, I think you and I are both lucky enough that we haven't seen firsthand how horrifying the current situation is around the world, thankfully, and kind of touch wood on that. But yet there is kind of a reluctance or I don't even know what the emotion was, but it's certainly a little bit difficult to sort of think about it. It was kind of felt very, very unimportant. I think that's kind of been broken down a little bit over the last couple of weeks, because it's exhausting thinking about what is happening in the world right now. It is exhausting to not actually have the outlet of sport, which a lot of people tend to have in terms of taking their mind off things. And it's obviously not just taking the mind off it for a lot of people during regular times. So I think that's kind of been broken down over the last couple of days, hasn't it? That it's actually like, people shouldn't be demonized for thinking about sport. People should have the ability to think about this thing while also accepting that there is bigger issues in the world right now.
Yeah, I think the whole notion that anybody's going to be demonized for anything at the moment, maybe we can all just cool the jets on that and have conversations about what's happening, as opposed to the old school traditional rows that everything evolved into, because they haven't really served us very well as a society, have they? I think, even apart from on the philosophical level that you're speaking about, on a very practical level, sports are starting to think, how could we play a role at the at the end of this? If the curve eventually gets flattened, which it will do, because every government around the world is starting to take it seriously, or certainly at local levels, even in places where federal governments aren't taking it seriously, the curve will flatten eventually, right? And at that point, there needs to be some plan in place, and there needs to be some shared vision of what the future would look like. English football, obviously, yesterday, for Miguel Delaney's story, had one, and we're starting to see conversations happen about what a GAA future might look like. And we'll get to some of the other stories about GAA in the papers, but there's one on the back of the Indo this morning where the county chairman of Wexford is suggesting that maybe the club championship could return before the inter-county championship. Now, there was a big debate yesterday on Twitter after a columnist said that, like, let's ditch the inter-county season and play the club season. And essentially, it'll be a truncated year. Let's give it up to the club and see what it would look like. And from a philosophical point of view, you can see why people who are big fans of the club game, returning the game to the grassroots, might get behind an idea like that. From a practical perspective, there's no money really involved in that, and the organisation needs money centrally to feed the army of coaches that it has around the country that are actually very important in terms of the engine of actually growing the sport in schools and keeping it going in clubs. Because the sponsors obviously don't rally behind. There's one sponsor for the club championship, there's six for the two inter-county championships. And obviously, gate attendance would be a massive income for the inter-county game. But do we really think that there's going to be like a free-for-all in GAA grounds in July and August and potentially September, or is social distancing now the new norm? So that's kind of part, it seems that that's behind the thinking of the county board chairman, saying there'll be smaller crowds at these games anyway, much more manageable for an organization to monitor that and to steward those games and all that kind of stuff. So like, there's some internal logic to the notion of playing the club season first. I don't think the Wexford chairman's idea is to get rid of the inter-county game at all. It's just play the club game first, ease our way back into that, see how that works, and then ramp it up as the year goes on.
Potentially, yeah. Like, I certainly read it kind of the other way, that the club season would become the important thing, and if you get the county game played, then you get it played. like, is it a situation that it just, we now enter into almost a month that April would have been, that you enter into a club month to ease Gaelic games back into our lives, potentially? Maybe. Like, I think the idea of the GAA just ditching the intercounty season or actually putting the club first this year is fanciful at best. And I don't think it's actually a very good idea either to just ditch the intercounty season. And I know nobody's actually saying to ditch the intercounty season. But as you said yourself there, like, it is the financial backbone of the entire organisation. We're seeing pay cuts happening in Croke Park this week. It is hugely important. It's hugely important to all the supporters as well. Let's not forget, like, there are plenty of Wexford fans who want to see their county go out this year, as well as see their club go out this year. Like, do the two things need to tic-tac perfectly? Like, could we potentially have a couple of rounds of club championship this year without county players, I dare say? Like, is that entirely off the table? Like, I don't know. Like,
I mean, that seems to be off the table. No one has suggested that. Certainly the notion of there being a full league campaign without players from the club league campaign would happen at the same time as the intercounty championship. That seems to have been floated, but it's like, that's a leap too far. I actually do understand the logic of what the Wexford County Board Chairman is saying, is like, ease your way back in. And if the intercounty season happens to run to October or November or December, like, if every county has GAA action playing, you know, 32 counties, club championships run off in July and August, and then after that you start the intercounty season, and it goes on for the rest of the year. And this is how we deal with 2020. And then next year you hit reset and everything goes back to the beginning. That's not the worst idea of all time, is it?
No, it's not. And I think that if you do have a plan there, that you could get the vast majority of club championships played off in the summertime and then just hand things over to the intercounty season, it definitely wouldn't be. And, like, I guess also, like, I don't know, I think that if you're looking at the GAA calendar, the thing you look at first is at the end, like, where does this season finish up for GAA? And if it finishes up at the start of next year or at the end of this year, I can't quite remember, I think it may be the start of next year that the senior club All-Irelands are played. So my instinct would be to kick that back to St. Patrick's Day again, go back to the old familiar place of St. Patrick's Day, kick the intercounty football All-Ireland back to the third Sunday of September again, a familiar place, but it gives the GAA an extra month. Now, if you play the club championships before that, you obviously need a hell of a lot more time. And maybe you just flip them entirely and you bring the All-Ireland club championship to the end of September, to the start of October. And once that is done, then you potentially play a 2 month, whatever, 12-week All-Ireland championship up to Christmas, which kind of sounds ridiculous, but it's totally doable. Like, I don't think too many people would be against that. It's like the last couple of years we've seen when you got to the provincial championship round and club and stuff, pitches seem to be fine. I think coming up to Christmas, the weather tends to be fine. Like, dying light is your only issue, but like, dying light happens in an All-Ireland football final replay or hurling final replay if you're playing it on a Saturday night. So that's not a new problem. We don't have the luxury to actually say this is the correct course of action and we now have to do it. And I think that people in Croke Park, I assume that they're not wedded to any sort of tradition this year. Like, they should be looking at what the Wexford chairman is saying and thinking deeply about what he's saying and considering it as a potential option. Like, I do wonder, though, Ger, like, if you take that idea on, and if you want to get something perhaps loosely planned over the next couple of weeks, and you can't follow through what the Wexford manager or the Wexford County chairman is saying because of the fact that social distancing will still very much be in play come June or July, does the club championship then just get ditched because you've got a club or you've got a intercounty All-Ireland coming down the tracks in 2 months after that? Like, once you set the intercounty start date, that's concrete for me. Like, you can't go moving that because the club is still going. Whereas, unfortunately, this has been the case that you can always push the club back, which I know is not fair either.
Sure, but I don't think anything's concrete. That has to be, all contingency planning at the moment has to be on the basis that nothing is concrete. And this is scenario A. Scenario A is the curve flattens. The government says, okay, we're going to start reintroducing normal life again at some level. Small gatherings of 500 people are going to be allowed, assuming that they maintain social distancing. And look, these are complete scenario planning, right? But you would think that actually, you know, we can sell 500 tickets to any county ground, and we can have patches of people who are family members safely ensconced in a ground like that. And you think, okay, well, actually, we could play those games. And again, for the integrity of competitions, inter-county competitions, it might be no harm for everybody to have a month playing with their club and then to go back into inter-county action. So, like, I can see a graded or a graduated step up. So that, and after that, the government says, okay, you know, we've crunched the numbers, and now gatherings of 1,000 are safe, and gatherings of 5,000 are safe. And suddenly, by October, inter-county football is back, and we're watching it on Saturday night and Sunday afternoons. And it's the championship, and we're playing on grounds that have been well maintained over the summertime. And actually, that's not the worst end of the year, is it?
No, absolutely not. It'll be totally fine. It's we all know it's the start of the year. February, March are your danger months, really, at the moment, and a bit of January when it comes to playing games. So the Allianz League really is the one that's always under most threat. So yeah, like if you get to a situation where people are like, yeah, you can maintain social distancing in the terraces and let's play these games. What about the players and the management then and the staff? Like, the Premier League are already considering unbelievably stringent measures to actually put people into camps this summer.
That's in June, right? They're talking about June. We're obviously not talking until July, August, September. And we're also talking about a completely different approach in Ireland. Now, the other thing that's going on here is that there was a story yesterday about Germany having developed an antibody test, and they're going to give people a certification that you have antibodies and then allow you to go back to work. So I think there's a lot of science to happen, and a lot of stuff has to catch up with what the disease is doing to people. So look, that's the complete unknown, obviously, at the moment, Owen. If people are at risk of reinfection, if we're at risk of another outbreak, then nothing happens. You know, it's completely immoral to play sport and to subject people to that potential threat. You can't do it. Like that, at that point, it's like, okay, 2020 doesn't happen. Let's move on. Let's start planning for 2021.
Sure, yeah, that's the obvious situation. Like, and it isn't a like for like case either, comparing Ireland with the UK. Like, it's obviously the way they've handled things there has been a little bit different. And I guess it is a bit like, in fairness, Fergal McGill did say last week, he did mention the month of June. He said, if we are up and playing by June. Now, I know he's got to say that he's got to put forward the best case scenario, and they can't cancel the Allianz Leagues just yet either, because like, that is also a money spinner for the GEA as well. Every single game they can play is a money spinner. So I can totally accept why that needs to be the public message put out there. But at the same time, it's there, and June has been mentioned as a potential return date. I can't see it myself, but I think July, possibly on a lower scale, as you mentioned, might actually be the way forward. Like, I think a lot of people are potentially thinking about July as a potential return date for inter-county. But as you say, does the organisation go forward with that if they can't actually pack out provincial and grounds in Croke Park, for example, or Semple, or wherever these games are going to take place?
Yeah, and think about how excited we'd all be to watch some of the best club teams go up against each other. Like, it would be the perfect kind of showcasing for that level, and then slowly builds up and the hype builds up and everybody starts to think about what's happening next. So let me tell you about what else has gone on in the world of sport, because it is actually a busy 24 hours. UEFA are to hold a conference call tomorrow, where it's likely that Ireland's Euro 2021 playoff semi-final, is it not the Euro 2020? Did they actually turn into Euro 2020? Anyway, will be put back until September or October due to the coronavirus pandemic. The fixture between Ireland and Slovakia is currently scheduled for early June in Bratislava. It's reported as well that the Premier League are planning to resume the season behind closed doors in May in order to finish the season by July if they get the go-ahead from the UK government. Premier League clubs will convene remotely on Friday. Europe's clubs are determined to finish their seasons in order not to trigger huge financial rebates to broadcasters. So I'm sure the rest of Europe is looking at this as a potential model. Jack Grealish has been fined by Aston Villa with the money going to a local Birmingham hospital. The Villa captain apologised after he accepted an invitation to a friend's house despite the lockdown rules imposed by the UK government during the coronavirus pandemic. Grealish says he's deeply embarrassed by his actions and urged the public not to follow his example. We'll play that video a little bit later on. European Tour Chief Executive Keith Pelly said they're going to need clarity of the global coronavirus situation before they can begin rescheduling events. The Dubai Duty Free Irish Open at Mount Juliet in May became the latest event to be postponed as a result of the pandemic. Already the Masters and the USPGA have been deferred. Tour chiefs are hopeful that the Irish Open can be rearranged in rugby Lions organisers have played down fears of next year's tour of South Africa overlapping with the rescheduled Olympics. The three tests with the Springboks are due to run concurrently with the Tokyo Games, but their managing director, Ben Calverley, says the 5 p.m. Irish kickoff times of the tests means Olympic action will be over by then. What a summer it's going to be, assuming everything gets back to normal. The COVID-19 pandemic has led to USA Rugby filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The association says they've taken a step as suspension of rugby in the United States leaves them facing compounded and insurmountable financial constraints. The men's and women's national teams will continue unaffected. It is 7:45 here this morning. We're going to bring you to the sports pages right now. Then we've got our lockdown roundup, lockdown lowdown. Off the couch with Mickey Quinn, the Longford footballer, who's also a secondary school teacher, is going to talk to us about. He's been doing skills videos. He did one for us yesterday on our social channels, but he's been doing his own as well on his own social channels. Well worth checking out. Got to bring you through the football news of the day. Harry Kane, Jack Grealish, Jadon Sancho, and some Manchester United gossip. Going to play a bit of Ronan O'Gara's rivalry with David Humphreys and a crappy quiz, a brilliant crappy quiz with one of the best questions that Owen has ever devised. There's a clip doing the rounds at the moment about who is a pub quiz, who won the 2020, whatever it is, and your man goes, oh, nobody won it. And then obviously he has to shout it and the next table beside them actually ends up overhearing it. I'm spoiling it here a little bit, but actually this is a tease, Owen. In the business they call this a tease. But it's good, isn't it? It's a good tease, wasn't
it? Yeah, we're talking 2001.
Let's bring you through the papers. OTB AM. Right, we're going to start with offtheball.com. Our lead story this morning is the Ronan O'Gara and David Humphreys rivalry. This was a rivalry, Owen, that we talked about recently in the context of the Classic Game Club when we did Brian O'Driscoll's hat-trick of tries. Mm. And O'Gara starts that game, but Humphreys comes on and wins the match. Like, O'Driscoll, man of the match, but Humphreys just nails a kick from like pretty much the halfway line, puts the ball down, looks up, kicks it, and it's like with 3 minutes left on the clock to put Ireland 2 points up. So it was one of the biggest kicks of his entire career, and it was just like, yeah, no bother. But in the context of what had happened the previous year, when he'd missed a much easier kick from much closer in to beat the French for the first time in two decades, you're like, that was balls of steel. And this is one of the, I would say, underrated rivalries in Irish sport, because people have kind of obviously remember O'Gara versus Sexton much more, but this was a great rivalry.
Mm. It's true, isn't it, that like poor David Humphreys, like completely in the shadow of Brian O'Driscoll in that game in Paris. And of course, Brian O'Driscoll puts Ireland in the position to actually win the game. But nobody remembers, it's people of a certain age probably will, but I certainly had no recollection that it was Humphreys that won the game for Ireland. No recollection of this whatsoever until actually watching the game back recently, because it's known as the O'Driscoll hat-trick game. Sure, it was. And it was one of the great individual performances we've seen in Six Nations. But who wins the game for Ireland? Who actually, like, if it was football, whoever scored the winning penalty would have been remembered forever, and that would be the person that would be held up. But poor David Humphreys gets forgotten, and I think this rivalry also gets forgotten. Like, you talk about the fanfare that Sexton versus O'Gara has got. This thing is very much in the shadows compared to that.
Yeah, Dublin media bias on that one. The other stories that we have on offtheball.com this morning, Roy Keane's looking for you. He's not happy. That's a headline on our feature interview with Danny Higginbotham that went out yesterday afternoon at 5 o'clock on all of our social channels with Joe. Best place to get that now is on youtube.com/offtheball. You can hit subscribe to that anytime we go live. We'll let you know. There's a couple of stories from that as well, talking about Dennis Irwin. And we also have the story that Billy Joe Saunders has had his license suspended following his domestic violence comments. So that is the lead story on the offtheball.com website. The lead story on the back page of the Irish Independent this morning: club matches should be played before county restarts, says Wexford chief. And in it, he goes on to say, could a scenario where the club championships are played off in July and August and then the inter-county resumes be looked at? I certainly think so, and I'd be suggesting it. With the restrictions on gatherings of large crowds likely to continue into the foreseeable future, Kent believes this could present an opportunity, given the national sport is more likely to be affected than its local equivalent. There are less crowds, more players impacted, and the club is at the heart of the GAA after all. So this is Derek Kent, the Wexford chairman, who's suggesting that. There's a Philly McMahon interview with Conor McKeown, obviously always worth a read, Philly. We had him on the show last week talking about some of the issues that are raised here, talking about his business and having to lay off his staff and lay off himself. But he's also talking about the issues around mental health that I think is definitely going to be something that the country needs to address, you know, in a lockdown situation, lock-in situation like this. Everybody needs to be careful about making sure they're getting exercise and speaking about what's going on. And then Brendan Irving is Ireland's boxing captain, and he has been self-isolating, having returned from the Olympic qualifiers in London in his ma's attic. I was trying to stay away from my mummy and my sister and the kids in case I was to come down with the symptoms. So he should be 14 days clear today or tomorrow. So fingers crossed he hasn't got anything like any of the Turkish boxers who ended up getting stuff there. What have you got for us, Owen?
The Irish Examiner this morning leads with Cork football boss Ronan McCarthy. McCarthy fears Kerry showdown won't be played in May. I think he's got a little bit more than just fears. He says there's no chance that the game will be played in May, and he is certainly right on that front. Milan doing an awful lot of praying during crisis. This is John Milan, who's been speaking to the Irish Examiner, saying that he's been going into the church quite a bit. He says that every opportunity I get, I've taken church back into my life. Going back into church, you might ask me, well, what do you believe in? I believe there is a God, and within the last 10 days, 14 days, I've been doing an awful lot of praying. To me, it's interesting what he says here. To me, it's another 40 minutes where you can go into a church and it's just silence and you can just switch off. There's no camera phone. There's no selfies. It's just a lovely 40 minutes where you can go in and don't hear anything. It's a break away from the outside world. And then he says, another place I love going is for a jacuzzi or a sauna. I suppose the two places where you won't see an iPhone or a camera phone or people taking selfies are in a church or in a leisure centre where they have a jacuzzi and a sauna. I love that way of life now where you can switch off for an hour or 2 hours. So that's John Milan. That's how he's coping during lock-in at the moment. And Cork star Tracy primed and ready to face another battle, writes Owen Cormacan.
I haven't heard anybody compare a jacuzzi to a church before, but there you go. It's a bit of insight into the mind of John Milan. The Irish Times next for me this morning. Australia considered pulling out of November test in Dublin. This is Gavin Comiskey's story. Autumn international fixtures in Europe could be cancelled as unions look to cut costs. And look, I suppose it does make sense, really, when you think about it. If the rugby championship is shelved, obviously we expect the summer tours to be shelved. I don't think that's been formally announced just yet. But would the Northern Hemisphere teams, or sorry, would the Southern Hemisphere team come to the Northern Hemisphere to do their traditional November tours, or do we just play fixtures that are more obvious fixtures here? I don't know. I suspect that maybe Japan might continue to come and do their tour, given that they won't have any other matches. But if the rugby championship is postponed, then they just play the rugby championship in the November window. And that would make the most sense, Owen, right?
Yeah, I think that something falls by the wayside, doesn't it, this year in rugby? I don't think you get everything played at this point. I think summer is done, and done for good. I would have thought that, like, you just don't obviously have any rugby this year. It's just too much of a test to consider that two different sides of the world can return to a normalish way of life on time together. I just can't see that happening. You've also got a lot of Six Nations fixtures to play. You've also got Champions Cup, potentially Pro 14, although I have my doubts about that, fixtures to get played as well later on this year. It just makes more sense to plan for the more local version of rugby that exists in this hemisphere to get those played at some point this year and just forget about the prospect of getting anything like this played, because the season is already very, very compact. We would have been having conversations this summer about our players going to be fit enough going to Australia, and I just don't think that this can happen now. I've got the Herald, Philly. This is
Sorry, one last point on that, because when you think about it, like, are the IRFU going to make more money from selling out Lansdowne Road for an Australia game than they are for having the rest of the Pro 14 season go? There probably is a tension there where the November internationals are a bit of a cash cow for the unions. And so this might be the Australian union saying, if you're going to make $2.5 million from that, we want our costs covered and extra money. There probably is some negotiation, some horse trading to be done where some of these fixtures might be saved. The RFU, for example, I can imagine them desperately trying to sell out the November internationals because they're absolutely gagging for cash.
Absolutely. So it's a good point, actually. There may be just a bit of a like a percentage or something that goes to Australia, and whoever's traveling up this way in November, if November is a safe enough time to play these games. The Herald, as I mentioned here, also has that Philly McMahon interview. This is a mental test. He says lockdown measures will have a dangerous impact. Clubs could lead GAA return. That's the Wexford GAA story as well. And Jack Grealish has apologised for his actions.
So the Olympics have confirmed that they're going to go ahead in July 2021. And that's the lead story in the back of The Guardian this morning. We can be light at end of tunnel backs Tokyo to succeed as Olympics delayed to July 2021. That's the headline in the bottom piece. And then at least I now have another year to become a better athlete. Taekwondo star Jay Jones on staying positive in the pursuit of history. And Jack Grealish fined and apologises after breaking guidelines. So Jack Grealish has done one of those hostage videos, which we'll play you a little bit later on, where somebody off camera is saying, apologise, or I'll clip you around the ear.
The Irish Daily Mail this morning is autumn date, Ireland's Euro playoff put off to September. So we're starting, as you say, like it is necessary to, I guess, have some semblance of plans in place. And Republic of Ireland's Euro 2020 playoff against Slovakia may not take place until September at the earliest. So the game is obviously fixed for last Thursday. We could have been, that was supposed to be last Thursday. Who knows if we would have still been in proceedings. And then the game is put back to June the 4th. But the UEFA chiefs now prepared to defer all 8 playoffs until September or even October, with a decision expected at tomorrow's video conference involving all 55 nations. I know what you're saying, Ger. What about the Nations League? Leinster's Burn, meanwhile, hoping for May resumption. This seems a tad ambitious again, but I guess if you're a professional athlete, you've got to almost have some sort of date in your head, don't you, to kind of keep yourself in the right mindset. But it's Ross Burn harbouring hopes of completing the current season despite the indefinite hiatus. He says, "We are hoping that the season can start again in the summer, maybe towards the end of May. We might be going back in together, and hopefully social distancing and this lockdown will speed the process up a little bit more," he says. "It'll hopefully give us a chance to play a little bit more during the summer," is what we are hearing. So he's actually probably just saying that May as a potential return date to some form of training and being a proper Leinster Rugby employee by then rather than actual matches. And Flap Jack says the back of the Mail as well this morning, "Grealish issues grovelling apology, but left sweating over £80 million United move."
Yeah, so we'll talk about that a little bit later on with the transfer roundup we're going to do for you. The back page of the Star this morning, the Irish Star, bushfires, quarantine in the UAE and making the most of 2 kilometres. That's a Sam Bennett story where 2 kilometres actually is a radius that you can do a 10 to 12 kilometre cycle in pretty easily. They've got a great picture there of Arkell at Talca Park, the day Arkell came to Talca Park, and there's a 2-page story on that inside. The John Fallon story there, FAI finances take a big hit. Gary Owens has highlighted potential effects of the COVID-19 pandemic on the FAI's finances, saying that he wrote to all staff yesterday and that they are going to avail of the government initiatives to try and protect jobs, but it looks like they're going to lose loads and loads of money. No coaching courses, which generates about $7 million a year, according to the latest accounts in 2018. So they're facing a very difficult time. And the main story there is gone till September. Ireland's crucial Slovak clash won't happen before the autumn. And they also have the Jack Grealish, "I was stupid." So yes, you were, Jack.
Yeah, Jack Grealish, the lead on the back of the Irish Sun this morning. They've gone with a Justin Bieber line. "Is it too late now to say sorry? Sports stars in the dock. COVID at one, Grealish grovels, but United move could be off." And then also COVID at two, Billy Joe donates 25k but loses fight license. We've also got a story here, National booked in, and in brackets virtually. This is a story people might have seen, that Grand National might be replaced by virtual Grand National, with all proceeds going to help the fight against coronavirus. Here we go team is in relation to the Olympics being pushed back by almost exactly a year. It's basically the same dates the whole thing kicks off, and Premier League faces £2 billion call. We'll come back to the football a little bit later on in this morning show.
Okay, so the back page of the London Times, Grealish gets $150,000 fine for stupidity. Aston Villa disciplined star for a late night jaunt, and there's a picture of him there after he was pictured at the scene of an accident in Solihull on Sunday despite the lockdown. So and then also Olympics move creates logjam. So apparently the Commonwealth Games, which are due for Birmingham, are facing a bit of a lockdown. I know, Owen, that of all the things that are going on in the world right now, the biggest biggest concern that we've had, and it's been a shared concern, I think, right across you and me and everybody we know, is what's going to happen with the Commonwealth Games?
Yeah, the Commonwealth in general and the Commonwealth Games are certainly two things I tend to think about quite a bit. Kind of the dying thoughts before you go to sleep every night, really. It tends to be about the Commonwealth. The London Independent this morning, Olympics set for July 2021. A picture of Tokyo there and the Olympic rings. Premier League consider isolated camps, writes Miguel Delaney. I presume they carried out in yesterday's paper as well. And Mercedes breathing aid to help virus patients. The Mercedes AMG Formula One team have helped develop a breathing machine that keeps coronavirus patients out of intensive care without the need for a ventilator. So the continuous positive airway pressure device has been developed in under a week alongside engineers at the University College London and clinicians at the University College London Hospital, which could alleviate the need for so many ventilators across the country. So the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency has already approved the breathing aid, which is already used in hospitals but is not readily available. And while 40 devices have already been delivered to UCLH and three more to other London hospitals, developers say that up to 1,000 CPAP machines can be billed per day by Mercedes. So that is certainly quite a contribution from a sporting standpoint.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And it goes back to a piece that Kieran Bradley wrote on Off the Ball last week, which maybe we should dig out and put up again. He made the point that never in human history has all of humanity been focused on solving the exact same problem. And I think it was somebody tweeted a link yesterday to some Lithuanian came up with a way of designing a mask that you could mass produce. And I think he like either invented it on the Thursday and the Lithuanian government had ordered a million of them by the Sunday. And you begin to see just how quickly we can solve problems. The old where there's a will, there's a way. And all those scientists who work, the boffins who work for Mercedes, are doing some good work there at the moment. Let's move on to the Telegraph this morning. And they've obviously got that story there. Did you just do the Telegraph?
No, I did the London Independent. Mercedes stuff as
well. Okay, so they've got the same story. And then Grealish, I'm sorry, it's a picture of his white Range Rover. And it's a picture of him outside, and then Aston Villa captain deeply embarrassed over a car accident. Player faces fine as he issues grovelling apology for breaching lockdown. New Olympic dates cause major calendar changes and Lions clash. But the Lions are happy enough with it, obviously. Australia set to deliver 10 million blow to RFU. That's the fact that Australia won't be coming to play England either. So maybe a deal will be done here where money is found to make it worth Australia's while to come and still play those games. And then Newcastle forced to put staff on furlough. So that's Mike Ashley's careful husbandry of Newcastle United continues as he has put those staff basically on unemployment benefits. That is those papers that I have this morning for you.
Just one more for me then. It's just the Irish news this morning. Rates relief for GAA clubs here. So with financial streams from fundraising, lotto, gate receipts, gym memberships and bars all cut off due to COVID-19 lockdown, clubs in Northern Ireland will not have to pay rates for April, May and June this year. You've also got that story, as you mentioned, Tokyo Olympics were scheduled for next year. Belfast boxer Brendan Irvine will lead the Irish charge. His place already rubber stamped. And Croke Park places all employees on furlough. Croke Park taking the reluctant step of placing all its employees on furlough due to the coronavirus pandemic. But the association will make a big effort to retain all staff when the crisis eases or ends. And obviously there's been pay cuts as well reported from Croke Park.
Yeah, so those pay cuts are actually reported by Conor McKeown today in the Independent Group, and fairly significant pay cuts. I think I just don't have the details here in front of me right this second, but I'll get there. If you want to actually talk about the Nicky Rackard story, which I think is being reprinted today.
Yeah, the Wexford People, for anybody living in Wexford who wants to pick up a copy today, it will be worth your while giving it a read because they've printed a story. Nicky Rackard, in his own words, the aftermath of that All-Ireland triumph sent me on the road to an incurable disease. Before he died, Wexford hurling legend Nicky Rackard wrote a series of articles for the Sunday Press, giving an extraordinary insight into his life. In the first of a series, we reproduce the fascinating articles. And I didn't know this, but Nicky Rackard had huge struggles with alcoholism. Like it seems during his playing days, or at least at the latter end of his playing days anyway, this became a fairly pronounced issue for Nicky Rackard. And there's like some really interesting stuff in the article just about how he kind of talks about society and their view of alcoholism at the time, that it is an illness, that the disease isn't really seen as such when he's writing in his own time in Ireland, and it's almost something that you could copy and paste to something in modern Ireland. It's like he says, it's a strange disease. There are thousands of people in Ireland suffering from it, and they don't even know they have it. Yet if they have one drink, the disease will spring into life and take over. There are others who have it, and they know they have it. They know they cannot be cured, but they can live a normal life as long as they stay away from the first drink. And it's interesting, like he speaks about it in a very intelligent way, understands hugely what alcoholism is and how much of a disease it is and what it has done to his life. And it kind of is tinged with sadness talking about the 1956 All-Ireland, when Wexford have won the All-Ireland. And you get the sense from the first part of this piece that that night was going to become, unfortunately, a fairly significant night in his path to alcoholism, that he hadn't drank for quite some time before that. But that night it was set to change. Now, I presume he's going to go into more detail in it in part two of the article, because part one really is about his education and picking up a hurl for the first time and playing hurling in St. Kieran's College, where he was a boarder, kind of went to school late at the time, because he had actually contracted typhoid. And after getting to the school late because of typhoid, he was found it very, very tough on himself, was perhaps bullied a little bit in school, but then his hurling prowess came out and the hurling helped him to find a bit of comfort in St. Kieran's. So it's a brilliant piece for anybody who wants to dig it out. Just such a fascinating character, Ger.
It's an amazing piece, and I think it's a multi-part piece as well, so there's going to be more of it printed by the paper, and like, this is the type of stuff that we should all be reading, especially at this time, because it seems so relevant. Like, you know, the World Health Organization issuing an edict saying maybe boozing through this isn't actually the best way to go about getting through it. But obviously, you know, a lot of people are turning to booze at the moment to get them through this very difficult situation. So, a warning from our past that this is obviously something that you really need to be very careful about. But he hadn't drunk for 5 years. He'd obviously sworn off, I think it was after the death of a friend.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, one of those sliding doors moments in the person's life, which obviously just goes in a fairly horrific direction for him from that point forward. And like Owen, it's difficult to explain the reverie with. So I would have extended family from down the area, and like the absolute reverie within which the records are held. It's like the O'Shea's, right? They're kind of at that level for Kerry football. You know, no, there's been no generation since that has been as good as that generation.
There's always like a couple of things in these pieces, that little nuggets that kind of seem insignificant, but always kind of stick out to you after you've moved away from the piece. Like, one of them is the fact that he reckons they're the only records in Ireland, or at the time this is the only record family in Ireland. Like a Norman name, and he couldn't really trace back beyond his grandfather, which he found a little bit strange because they are the only records. And this, just kind of the last thing that kind of really stuck out to me in this is about the attitude of Nicky Rackard, because we hear it so much around this era of hurling about how unbelievably competitive someone like Christy Ring was. And I don't think we hear as much about it from a Nicky Rackard perspective. We always hear about him as a great hurler, but we don't know a whole pile about how dedicated he was to his craft, which I think we all assumed he was, but also how competitive he was. So he talks about the instinct and the desire to succeed. And he says, "I believe this instinct, desire, drive, call it what you will, is a good thing. I have no respect for the competitor who only goes through the motions. But now I feel this urge can be a dangerous thing. If it is not kept under control and allowed to reach the proportions of an obsession, especially if carried over from the sphere of sport into job or profession." And I guess this is probably one of the earliest examples we have of a male in Ireland who realizes the dangerous capabilities of his own obsession, that having the singular focus of succeeding is hugely important to this guy being one of the best hurlers of all time. But would it be something that would drive him to dark places in his personal life? Perhaps. I just found that a very, very interesting point that he'd be able to make.
Yeah, and it's way ahead of its time, it feels like, in terms of dealing with the psychology of the psychology of addiction, the stigma associated with the disease, just talking about it as a disease as well. So a great piece You know, well done to the Welsh people for digging that out. Just wanted to briefly talk about those cuts in the GAA. So salary cuts of those earning up to €38,000 will be subject to a 10% cut. A 15% reduction will be applied to salaries between €38,000 and €76,000, while any remuneration above that will take a 20% hit. This is so all GAA staff and did you say 500 employees? Was that the figure? Yeah, this is Conor McKeown saying the change will affect approximately 500 employees, either fully or partially paid by Central Council. So the GAA moving very quickly to try and shore up their finances, and some great details in this as well. Last year, Croke Park reported a 22% increase in gate receipts, generating a 6.5 million boost to a figure of over 36 million. And in a wholly unlikely doomsday scenario, the GAA would stand to lose in the region of 60 million if they were unable to stage the All-Ireland Championships this year. Their 2019 financial report showed annual turnover of 118 million, up 11% on the previous year. So they've obviously been very, very well run in recent years. But, you know, that's going to be great that they have that to fall back on. But obviously they want games when it's safe to do so back up and running fairly quickly. OK, so it's 11 minutes past eight here this morning. You're watching OTBAM. Plenty more coming up for you in the next hour. Mickey Quinn, the crappy quiz, our football roundup, the Ronan O'Gara, David Humphreys rivalry. And we're back next with our lockdown lowdown.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
This is OTB Sports Radio, Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
When you lose a big match like that, you have to soak that up.
Mm.
But to go into a dressing room and say you're celebrating to it, disrespectful. I mean, who's Mourinho to talk about disrespect?
The best analysis of all the week's football from Ireland's number one football man.
Pogba's a social media star. Right, he appeals to the young people now. He does his dance, he has his hair and all that. That's all he's worried about, in my opinion. Not worried about being a great player, Nathan.
John Giles. Every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
OTB AM.
Hi, I'm Claire Quinn. I'm here today with my dad. So
how did today go? Yeah, look, it was tough at times. We knew, you know, I've been parenting over 6 years now. And,
Six and a half.
I've been parenting over 6.5 years now, so I'd like to think I've enough experience built up. But, you know, it was, the big challenge is meeting the intensity levels and the energy levels that, you know, you guys bring. And I thought I did that well at times, but, you know, got off to a good start. We had, you know, we were up, we got our, everyone got dressed, got our teeth done, breakfast went well, but I made a mistake early on then, left a full glass of smoothie beside your 1.5-year-old sister, and, you know, you can't make a mistake like that at this level, you know. So, you know, it was, I'm not going to lie, having an outfit change that early in the morning and having a clean up after that was tough going, but I thought we recovered well, thought we came down, got into your senior infant's homework or your schoolwork, and, you know, I thought busy at maths went well, and I thought your writing was excellent. I did have a little bit of a wobble there with the Irish, Irish for purple, yeah, I didn't really know that one, needed your help with that, but look, overall I was pleased. It was tough going, but, you know, happy enough.
What about the food?
What about the food? Yeah, I think the big thing from the food is to try and stay proactive.
Yeah, there's a second part of that on stay proactive and don't give you guys the opportunity to ask what you want. Was the Mossy Quinn, you know, killing it with his parenting at the moment?
I actually hadn't seen that until right this moment. The good on her for putting in the 6.5. That half very, very important. Those 6 months are everything. And Kirkra is a tough word, in fairness to Mossy.
I mean, the level of interviewing was the level above the interviewing that most of them footballers get, but also the answering. You can see he's obviously involved in the media training. Some level, he's giving it out to the lads. Look, you know, you just, we're going to go down to Netwatch Cullen Park there, and it's going to be a very difficult game for us. Look, you know, from 1:15, they've got great players. That goalkeeper's very good. That left cornerback's very good. That fullback's very good. That right cornerback is good.
It's kind of indicative and reminiscent, I should say, of Johnny Cooper saying that the Carlo draw was going to be a tough draw for Dublin at the time. That's the next challenge for Mossy's daughter there now, is to try and get the best interview out of the dog. To be fair, she's as good a chance of anybody as anybody of getting the best interview out of the Dubs at the moment, I think.
She did pretty well there. Right, this next one is a tweet from Maura. I think Maura is very harsh here. Someone collect their man, Dad. Yeah. They ruined Instagram in one 40-second video.
Okay, guys, well, this may come as a surprise to you, but we managed to get one of those rescue flights out of Cork. So, at no notice at all, we're heading south for the sun. We managed to get a kind of an exemption, so here we go. So, look after yourselves, stay safe, and we'll talk again very soon.
That was genius, really.
I agree.
I see in the comments somebody saying, oh, Jesus, I was actually angry about the fact that they were on their mobile phone recording when they were taken off. I mean, I thought that was like absolute comic genius from these two.
100%. Do not tell them that they've ruined Instagram. You know, it's allowed them to actually thrive and spread their wings a little bit more on Instagram. I want to see more from this couple. To be honest with you, I was kind of, when I saw it, I was like, oh, my God. Why would you even publicize the fact that you're getting out of the country? Do this in a very quiet way and don't tell your neighbors. So it certainly got me in that one. Like,
that's why it worked. It was like, my batshit parents are doing what? Oh, okay. that was that.
It's as good a sort of ma and content as I've seen recently, because usual parent content is like getting forwarded WhatsApp messages saying, do not open this message, there are scams doing the rounds, or fairly unfunny memes. Like, there's a lot of volume on that front at the moment, but that one is definitely a level above. The next thing we want to get onto is
I was in a group recently, a WhatsApp group got set up, as somebody on Twitter was like, yeah, just think, do we actually need another WhatsApp group here? Anyway, I was in one which was set up, and it was a group to publicize a video that somebody was doing, and it was completely the right thing to do to set up the group, by the way, and it helped to get a video out a couple of weeks ago at an important time when, you know, the hand washing message and all the social distancing was still important to get out there. The public campaigns hadn't kicked into being just yet, and it was the morning after Leo Varadkar had said, stop spreading lies on WhatsApp. And a media member couldn't paste. The first message into it was, oh, be careful about this scam where people are sending around the something Pope virus in WhatsApp. Don't open the message. First thing I did was, that sounds a bit crap. I Googled it. First thing that comes up is Snopes.com. This is fake. I was like, literally the first message in this group where you would expect people to have paid some attention to what was going on last night was a complete bullshit WhatsApp forward. I don't know why they exist. I don't know who benefits from those. Like, I can't work out. Is it like, I just can't work it out who benefits from them, because there wasn't even a link in it. And I was like, oh, come on. So I left that group pretty quickly.
Yeah, thankfully there's no WhatsApp scams in our lockdown lowdown this morning. The next thing that I'm sure many of us spotted was James Campbell, who posted this photograph on his Twitter account yesterday, saying 10,000 retweets and I'll run a marathon in my back garden. It's about 6 meters long. And he is well and truly beyond the 10,000 at this point. James Campbell is certainly running a marathon in his back garden. 6 meters long. Is that like a rest that every side of the 6 meters technically, really, if you're doing a turn slow enough, is it an easier marathon, I wonder? Or is it actually tougher because, I don't know, you're turning and constantly putting pressure in your joints? I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
But I will be tuning in for the 6 meter marathon.
He should film it, and I don't know, can he make any money off it? He probably can, but if he can, he could raise some money for charity by doing a marathon in his back garden. He will definitely need a hip replacement at the end of it, though. It feels like it's the type of thing that wouldn't be very good for you, kind of running in a circle, a tiny 2 meter circumference circle. As we know, that's about 12 Ks that you could probably do in the circumference. I was at like 12 meters times, well, into how far do you have to run for the marathon in terms of meters? I don't know, 40 something K. So many times do you have to do that? I'm working out the math here. 5,000 laps.
Well, there's no washing getting done during his 5,000 laps anyway. That clothes hangers, definitely getting clothesline is definitely getting taken in during this whole thing, because that's just completely impractical. You should set up a camera, kind of like, you know, when you can tune into Temple Bar to see live action from Temple Bar. That should just, the people who do that should just move it over to this guy's house right now, to James Campbell's house, and we will just watch him do laps. That's the sort of content I would watch. And yeah, let's do it.
We're 2 weeks on, really, from Sweet Caroline in the pub in Temple Bar, aren't we? So I wonder, could we track down all those people yet and see, did any of them end up getting the coronavirus? Did any of them require hospitalization? That's, we're kind of at that point now where we'd know exactly what the outcome of that is, wouldn't we?
I'd say a lot of those people as well were probably tourists and have probably flown out of Ireland at this point, haven't they? I'm sure there was a few Irish people.
You don't think they were...
Coaches
up for the weekend going, don't know, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody, I don't think that many Irish people drink in that part of Ireland, do they? I'm hoping not. 20 minutes past here. I want to remind everybody about, we've set up a TikTok and we're doing a challenge on it. And the call has taken it on to do the Jolene challenge. How's your Jolene challenge coming on?
Good. I actually just need to click onto this because I need to... Did he do it with... Sorry, that's... I'm literally watching the video here. I'm trying to see if he did it with the fist or with the open hand, because a push-up is easier with your open hand, right?
It seems that way, yeah. You're supposed to plank in between.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's obviously one of the biggest challenges. He's doing it with open hands, I can see here. So if that's if that is the level of doing it, then it seems to be... it seems to be not the worst challenge in the world, but then you actually start doing it, I'd imagine that it's absolute hell. How long is this song in total? Like 3.5 minutes or something like that? It's a long old plank.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's a short clip, obviously. It's on TikTok, but by the end of this whole thing, we all expect to be able to do the full version of Jolene. That's our ambition. All right. Longford star Mickey Quinn is going to join us next on OTBM. First, though, let's go back to last night's Off the Ball, where David Humphreys joined Ronan O'Gara to reflect on their rivalry.
So often, even if you came off the bench in that period, I can vividly remember you having big impacts on games. So you certainly looked like you belonged at that level.
Well, it was more a case, I think, when you come off the bench, it's a very, certainly as a number 10, it's a very different mindset to approach a game. If you know you're starting on the Tuesday and you're building yourself up for it, and the pressure that comes with that, and organising a team, running a team, whether it's goal kicking, compared to coming off the bench when you've got a feel for the game, you know there's sometimes no pressure because the game's either won or it's not won. And I actually quite enjoyed coming off the bench. And I didn't, like, towards the end of my career, it got to the stage where, you know, Rog hated coming off. And I remember two or three times, well, there was one in particular, I think it's St Mary's, Rog, when you and Eddie O'Sullivan went.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. After the Australian game.
So often, even if you came off the bench in that period, I can vividly remember you having big impacts on games. So you certainly looked like you belonged at that level.
Well, it was more a case, I think, when you come off the bench, it's a very, certainly as a number 10, it's a very different mindset to approach a game. If you know you're starting on the Tuesday and you're building yourself up for it, and the pressure that comes with that, and organising a team, running a team, whether it's goal kicking, compared to coming off the bench when you've got a feel for the game, you know there's sometimes no pressure because the game's either won or it's not won. And I actually quite enjoyed coming off the bench. I didn't, like, towards the end of my career, it got to the stage where, you know, Rog hated coming off. And I remember two or three times, well, there was one in particular, I think it's St Mary's, Rog, when you and Eddie O'Sullivan went.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. After the Australian game, I think Rog had been taken off on the side of the pitch. We're all warming up, and Rog and Eddie O'Sullivan are almost yelling at each other on the sideline. And, you know, as he said, there's just no hiding place. The Munster boys are then at that point giving me plenty of stick. But it was a change of mindset more than anything else.
Ronan, David says there that the rivalry never kind of got toxic, or, you know, you weren't talking to each other kind of thing. Is that how you felt it was as well, that it was as close to a healthy rivalry as you could realistically get?
Yeah, it definitely was. It was. I think it was. We both realised 2-1 doesn't go. But I think, as David said, you obviously working with a guy, kickers spend an awful lot of time with each other, and you can make that session a valuable session, or else you can kind of do your own thing. But like, the best kicking sessions are done in pairs, so you do a lot of punting together, and then you finish up a goal kicking, and then you become competitive with each other. And I think we both really spiraled the ball really well to each other at times, and we had a great great kicking sessions. But there was definitely days, you know, I think, it was more probably me with Niggle, but Humps is a competitor too. I wouldn't underestimate his drive as well. You know, I think he's been humble as always with this, but like, it was huge at the time, because we could feel that there was probably a little bit of a turning in the team, and that there was a chance to actually do stuff. So as two number 10s, it was, I think the biggest thing is, if you have a problem with David Humphreys, you're the problem. You know, so I think it doesn't take too much to work out who the issue would have been with. So it would have been with me. But I think it was you're just dying to play, because it's a very different landscape 2000 in Ireland, playing for Ireland. It was still a massive sport, but like, there was massive excitement. You got to remember too, that was our coach was 37, I think.
Yeah.
Right. An underrated part of the entire thing. I didn't realize Eddie was so young at that time. A great interview with two lads talking about their rivalry. It's been teammates week, really, with Ronan O'Gara over the last week. We had Peter Stringer on, and obviously last night was David Humphrey. So more great stuff to come. Subscribe to our rugby feeds on the OTB Podcast Network. Wherever you get your podcast, just hit subscribe on OTB Rugby, and you'll get all that good stuff. You can subscribe to our highlights as well. Now, I'm delighted to say Mickey Quinn joins us this morning to talk to us about how he's dealing with the lock-in, as we're now calling it. Mickey, how are you getting on? What's the crack?
Good, thanks. Good. Battling away, but look, it's strange times. It takes a bit of getting used to, but just trying to find a bit of routine to every day at this stage, and having a bit of fun with different skill challenges probably kept my mind occupied and kept me busy for a while.
Yeah, it totally did, because you were actually, I think, probably one of the first people to take to social media and to put skills challenges up there. And the response has been brilliant. Like, people have genuinely taken this on and got involved in it. And we're now kind of 2.5 weeks in. It's maturing to the point where people expect you to be doing this kind of stuff now.
Yeah, I think probably when you're missing sport, the next best thing that you can have really is some form of a challenge that'll bring out that competitive nature that you're missing, whether you see someone else doing it or you're doing it yourself and you're trying to be the front runner in some form of a challenge. Because I think that's probably the nature of the beast, that when you don't have that competitive nature of playing games week in, week out, you need something to keep you ticking over, whether it be skill challenges or running sessions or something to do to give you that little bit of a buzz to keep you going. So that was kind of the initial thing. And I suppose one of the joys about it is, it's a lot of the skills that we're seeing, they're not really skills you're going to see in a Gaelic football game. But I think everyone's hoping that when the games start back, that we hopefully will see something new and created over this time.
Can I just ask about that? Why, like, so what would happen to you if you did? So we've been rolling the two there, the flick up, which is obviously, you know, it would be very risky in a game situation. But the shot where, I don't know if you can describe it for people who are just listening on the radio, but essentially it's like a completely camouflaged dropping of the ball from the right hand and kicking it behind your right foot, kicking it with your left foot into the bottom left-hand corner. We would all pay to see that in a game. That would just be sensational, even if it was just a pass to a teammate.
Yeah, I think it was 2015. I was doing it, one of the international rules training sessions up after training, and Niall Morgan was in goals, and I came in and done it, and it flew straight into the top left corner. And Pádraig Joyce was one of the selectors at the time, and he took out the camera and said, just do that again. And as soon as I went to do it again, I just swung it fresh air, missed it the next time. So that kind of put it to bed for a while. I said, no, needs a bit more work now. And me as a back getting into that position, you get a rush of blood at the best of times. So to try something like that, you need maybe someone like Jamie Clark, someone with a bit of composure when you get in that close to goal and getting there a bit more regular.
it's almost like as a back, you needed to come up with something to camouflage it. Jamie Clark has like his feints, and he's got his shoulders and hips are going to do the job for him. Just as a matter of interest, right? And this is a complete tangent. Why don't we see more of this type of stuff on the field in GA? Like, because most sports have people who are kind of just trying tricks and stuff for the sake of it. It doesn't seem to be something that's actively encouraged that much.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know, it's skills that aren't really practiced. Like, I think probably most coaching at the moment is, you know, your hand pass, your kick pass, a catch, and even a pickup. And that's really it. And I suppose probably from where I'm coming from, probably the PE teaching side of things or even the coaching side of things, that you're like, be creative, try something new. You know, there's lots of different skills and things that can be done, but I think it's probably not encouraged enough and probably not practiced enough to try different things. And it's frowned upon to, you know, stick to the basics, simple kick pass. And it probably comes in waves where, you know, people go out and do the simple thing right, and that's the focus. And, you know, play to the structures or systems that you're trying to do. Don't give the ball away. Whereas, you know, this could be a change in Gaelic football when things do come back, that, you know, things might be more tested or tried out and change things up a little bit.
So that's what do you call that? Do you have a name for that?
No, you have to come up with a name for it. It just comes round the back from the right hand through the legs and kind of hit it on a half volley with the left foot. So I'm right footed, but whatever way I found it, I find it easier going from the right to the left foot, whereas most people would probably prefer to do it the opposite way around with their stronger foot. But yeah, you have to come up with a name.
Well, that's the only thing it's missing. That's the little bit of marketing that you need for it. The other one is just a flick where you bang the ball off the ground and it kind of nicely arcs over into your hands. Is that right? Am I describing that right?
Yeah, I think I remember watching years ago Drogba doing it on Soccer AM, seeing one of those skill things, and saw Drogba doing it, and it took me a long time to get it and had to get a very bouncy ball starting off with. But yeah, it's a bit of fun now.
And when you put that out, what's the response been like from people around the country?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, it's kind of a bit of a mix from different people, whether, you know, Jesus, how do you do that? And I even see Kieran Ling put up a different flick up and kicking a point. And there's a few other guys that responded with different things. So, you know, it's brilliant to see, you know, different players with different tricks and what's in the locker. Because I think when you see different guys stepping out in the field and, oh, geez, he's a corner back or he's a corner forward, he must be skillful. You don't really get to see, apart from a dummy solo or even a fancy flick up, which is maybe not that fancy as the one I tried in a game. That's probably the height of it that you'll see, or a feint or something like that. Whereas a lot of the skills, there are a lot of guys that would have played soccer or different sports that would have skills that probably go unnoticed and taken for granted that these guys are skillful players, but they're probably doing the basics so well and stick to the basics and never really get a chance to express or show that bit of flair.
Mickey, you were great. You did a video for us yesterday for Off the Couch, which is our daily bit of movement, trying to get people just to go out and do something. And this one is kind of for everybody of all ages. It's fairly straightforward, but it is eye-to-hand coordination and some ball skills.
Yeah, probably one of the big things that I would have picked up from being in Australia was just basic ball handling skills. And there's a lot of that stuff that it's came from there. So tram tracks and different things. Like, I think one of the big things with that kind of ball handling skills and hand-eye coordination stuff is that you could touch the ball 300 times in maybe 5-10 minutes. Whereas if you go out in a group session and just you're taking part in a normal training session, if you touch it 40 to 50 times in an hour and a half, that's probably as much as you'll get. Whereas that kind of one-to-one stuff, or even in groups of two, smaller stuff, you're going to work on massive amount of ball handling skills. So, some bit of fun and bit of competitive stuff that we kind of try and implement with coaching underage teams and try and bring in that it's a lot of those things can range from underage right up, and you either make it harder by adding another ball or adding time or taking away a bit of space to make it harder for guys. So all those drills are kind of, like you said, they're for everyone.
Mickey, your day job is as a teacher. You teach PE and maths, and I know you've got a junior cert maths class going on at the moment. What's that actually like? How much of that has kind of been a bit of a concern, and what kind of anxiety are you seeing from your students at the moment?
I suppose I'm lucky enough. I probably Leaving Cert is where, you know, it's going to be a lot more difficult. Junior Cert is probably not taken as serious. So it's just gradually building. It's probably at the beginning, it took a while to get guys engaging in the process of probably taking pictures of assignments and sending them off and, you know, doing the work. Whereas I think it just, that first initial week or two took time, whereas I think now definitely probably two-thirds or more are probably engaging really well, and a few still to engage that bit more. But I think it's the unknown. When's it going to happen? Is it going to take place with the junior search? And that's the, I think, fear across the board with everything, whether it be sports, the junior cert, the leaving cert, work, when are we going back? And no one really knows. And I think that's where, you know, the difficult side of things is, especially for students, to try and get motivated and say, right, I'm going to do this work. I'm going to get stuck into it. Because if you don't know when it's coming up, that's hard, especially for teenagers, let alone adults that are kind of a bit more mature and able to deal with things. That's where a lot of them are probably finding it most difficult.
Yeah, it's an uncertain time at the best of times. Add in a global pandemic and all of a sudden it's like, hang on a second, what the hell's going on here? As a matter of interest, as a PE teacher, where do you think we are as a country with our mobility skills? And is there an opportunity here for like a mass messaging campaign to remind everybody to get off the couch and to use this opportunity to become a bit more proficient in eye-to-hand coordination and doing some exercise, any of that kind of stuff?
Definitely, and that's probably one of the things that I've probably been big on as a teacher and probably coaching too, that hand-eye coordination and different fundamental movement skills. They're not up to scratch. They're way behind where they should be. And I see it with students coming in first year that, you know, they haven't developed those basic skills that they're supposed to have by the age they're 12. And then that's the disappointing side of things. Like when kids start to play team sports and they don't have those basic skills, they're never going to prosper or do well at that sport. And then they get turned off sport in general, because if you don't have those basics of jumping, landing, catching, throwing, you go out and go into a game of basketball, let's say 5-on-5, and you're not able to do those skills, you're definitely not going to like that sport. So to throw someone into a game situation like that, they're just going to get browned off and won't enjoy that sport. So I think in one sense, it's an opportunity to promote and to work on these skills. But I think the big thing that probably not overloading kids with information and different bits and pieces, because I think you see the young kid that was setting up the goals and training goals and practicing different things, like it's just getting out and playing and being inventive and trying different things. And I suppose by giving kids a few tools, whether it be tennis balls and a wall and a bit of an idea off which you try something new, whether it be clapping before you catch it when you throw it off the wall, or turning around or up in the sky or closing your eyes, you can try different things. And I think it's an opportunity for kids to learn how to play again from all ages, just getting out and trying different things. Whereas I think at the moment everything is so structured from a PE side of things and from a play or coaching side of things. Everything, kids need that structure, whereas it could be an opportunity now for kids just go out, get outside, try something new, whether it be setting up your own games, relay races, soccer, bins and goals, different target practice, different things like that. So I think there's a lot to be said for that play time, whereas years ago that was what kids done, whereas now it's sitting down on the phone and doing just playing different games.
Yeah, no, and look, any good that might come out of this would be great. I just want to briefly ask you about GAA and what your feeling is about some kind of return to action. There's a story in the back of the Independent today where the Wexford County Chairman is suggesting that maybe the right thing to do is to play club championships first. You know, it would be a graduated step back into inter-county smaller crowds, which I think is actually going to be a very important thing when it comes to some restoration of normal life. Like, can we really see a position where social distancing is gone and all of a sudden it's grand to have 80,000 in a stadium? I think we could be quite a long time away from that. So maybe a couple of months of local action where, you know, it's easier to steward, you can limit crowds. You know, it's up to the local county boards to police, but actually there might be a way where the whole country understands that, and then you restore whatever is coming in terms of a championship. It's not the, you know, it's not the most obvious thing to be talking about right now, but down the line when the curve is flattened and it's safe to do so, does that make a bit of sense?
Yeah, it's probably something that I haven't heard that side of things yet, as discussed. But I think there's a lot of a sense to what he's saying. And I think it's something that you almost need to sit in your hands for a long time here and not make any real quick decisions, because it's long term. And that does make sense. Club games, kind of bringing that community side of things on a smaller scale and then gradually building it up to keep crowds, that they're not big, massive crowds at games. Also heard, played the last two league games and then straight into a knockout championship. If you're going to continue with the inter-county season first, that the two league games would be almost your warm-up for your championship structure. You know, it's one of those things that, what's the most important and why is it the most important championship game or competitions at the moment? Is it the league? Is it the province? Is it the All-Ireland series? Or do you go back to the basics and go with your club? That club is the be-all and end-all at the moment. And, you know, it could be a great point to start with that and build and see. But I think it's one of those difficult decisions that you kind of just have to sit and wait. And I suppose no one likes doing that, and the uncertainty builds even more. But I think it's not one of those things that can be rushed into with the circumstances.
One last question. As a player, would you mind playing inter-county games in October and November if the season had to go that late? Like, because there's definitely a sense that they want the inter-county season finished by September so that some form of normality can return to the club season. But like, if this year should be considered a different year and they were to do club first and then have the club championships, the inter-county club championships from January on. But if the inter-county season was to continue on into September, October, November, as a player, would you mind that?
I don't think so. I think it's unprecedented times. So most people are kind of, look, at whether it be November, December, I'm at the stage now where it'd be like a newborn calf let out into field. Just, you'd be crazy to just get out and play a ball, whether it be that time of the year or over the summer, that it wouldn't make a difference. I think most people would be of the same thinking, that just to get out and get things going again. And if it meant going right up until November, December, I don't think it'd be an issue.
Yeah, Mickey, your videos have been great. I presume you have plenty more planned for us. You've got other great tricks in the book that are going to go viral the way your first two did.
I'm running out very quickly. I think I overshot the mark too early. I should have built up slowly. I think I went with the big ones too early. Now I'm running out. I think a basic solo now is the height of it at this stage.
Well, listen, best of luck with it. And thanks a million for doing Off the Couch for us. And stay safe.
Brilliant. Thanks very much. You too.
Mickey Quinn there, the Longford footballer, a PE teacher, obviously, in St. Mel's, and a math teacher as well, of course. You should check out his social media feed, and you can check out his Off the Couch for us yesterday. More of those coming your way every afternoon around about 1 o'clock. Now, Danny Higginbotham joined Joe Malloy on last night's football show for a chat about his career. And, of course, we got talking about Roy Keane.
More than most clubs, there's a huge number of former Manchester United academy players and youth team players who went on to have very, very successful Premier League careers. And I always thought that was more than just, well, they were good players to begin with, and that's why they were at United. I thought there was something in the grounding the club gave them. When you say there's no edge on the likes of a Cantona or a Keane, what does no edge mean on a daily basis, Danny?
I mean, from my perspective, as a 16-year-old, you know, they would always be there for a chat. You wanted to have a conversation. It wasn't an issue, you know, with Roy Keane. He was sponsored by High Tech and I used to get his old boots. Then it was Diodora and he used to get his old boots. And it was wonderful for me. It was absolutely brilliant. And I remember one occasion, I'd come back from training and Jonathan Green, and he was injured at the time. I was probably only maybe 18 at the time. Mm. And Jonathan Green was injured and I've come back and he said, Roy's looking for you. And I went, well, what's the problem? And it was like, he wasn't happy. So I said, well, what's he said? He said, well, somebody had rung Diodora up on my behalf saying that I wanted to get boots off them. And I, to this day, I have no idea who it was, what it was or anything like that, because as young players at United, we didn't have agents. So I've gone home and obviously I've told my mum and dad and I was like, I can't leave it. You know, I can't leave it knowing full well that if I'm going to go in tomorrow, then I'm going to see Roy and, you know, he's obviously not going to be happy with me, because I understood completely the situation, that if he's looking at me and thinking, well, I'm giving you my boots, what's the problem? Why does an agent have to get involved? Because it was sort of frowned upon, and rightly so in my opinion at the time. We didn't need anything like that as younger players. So I got home and I rang the club and they were good enough. They gave me Roy's number. And I rang up and I think it was his wife that answered, and she said, you know, he's out walking the dogs at the moment. So I gave it 10 or 15 minutes and I rang back and I was expecting him to, like, you know, go really off for me, be really angry. And it was an unbelievable conversation. He just said to me, he said, Danny, he said, you know, he said, you're doing well. He said, but please trust me. He said, at the moment, you don't need an agent. You don't need anything like that. You know, you're getting boots from me. You know, I was getting his older boots because they didn't tend to wear boots for that long. You know, so they were near enough brand new. And I explained to him, I said, you know, I would never do that. I would never have anybody ring up. And he really understood me, and I really understood him. And it was a really good conversation for someone as young as me to understand, you know, the point of view of a world-class player at the time, the captain and leader at Manchester United, and for him to take the time to speak like that to me at such a young age, you know, spoke volumes, I thought.
That's Danny Higginbotham speaking with John Malloy yesterday on The Football Show. You can get that full interview available on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/offtheball. Of course, the best thing to do is subscribe to our football stream in the OTV podcast network. You can just get on there and hit subscribe. And anytime any new content comes your way, either from this show or from the evening show, we'll stick it up for you. Owen, you're back with us. Have you tried any of the GAA skills? I mean, you're obviously a GAA man. I mean, I know you're a rugby man now. I haven't been to the World Cup last year, but... Are you like a spring lamb waiting to get out there and kick a bit of ball?
I would love to, actually. I need to find a wall and do it, I'm sure, as well. I could just do it outside my back garden. I don't have a football, shamefully, in my house anymore. If I went, the next time I go home, I'll give it a go. They look great, in fairness. And I think if he's managed to come up with so many creative things so far, I can't imagine the well is too dry for Mickey Quinn at the moment.
No, there'll be some more to come. Right, let's talk some football. Harry Kane, we're going to start here. There is some talk about him perhaps maybe having had enough of what's going on at Spurs.
Yeah, well...
It's one of them things, you know. I couldn't say yes, I couldn't say no. I love Spurs, I'd always love Spurs, but it's one of them things. You know, I've always said if I don't feel we're progressing as a team or going in the right direction, then... I'm not someone to just stay there for the sake of it, you know. I'm an ambitious player. I want to improve. I want to get better. I want to become one of the top players. So it all depends on kind of what happens as a team and how we progress as a team. So it's not a definite. I'm going to stay there forever, but it's not a no. It's not a no either.
So that's Harry Kane. We're not ruling out, sure, the fact that he might not be a Tottenham Hotspur player forever. That was, of course, from his Instagram chat with Jamie Redknapp over the course of the weekend. People are, I think, kind of losing the rag a little bit over this. I think, you know, it's the sort of thing that happens. It's the sort of thing that slips in when you kind of have your guard down a small bit. I don't think Harry Kane is necessarily issuing a come and get me plea or that clubs are on high alert. I think for Harry Kane, it's a matter of whenever football returns, for him to return and for him to get back on the pitch and score more goals, because it's going to be an interesting couple of seasons for him. If he actually does have that desire to actually play for a bigger club than Tottenham, if he doesn't want to actually become a club legend and hang around forever, like, he's got to continue the output that he's put in over the last couple of years and up at a small but potentially as well. Like, or is there going to be a huge clamour to get Harry Kane at the moment if we take into account that there's so much recency bias in football? Maybe not because of a period of absence this season. Like, we could talk about transfers here, Jared, because there's been a couple of interesting things floated. There's a couple of rumours which we'll get to in a moment. But one of the things I just wanted to touch on now, and I'm not sure if you've seen this, is the new study from the International Centre for Sports Studies, Football Observatory. So the Football Observatory has in the past put together the valuation of clubs and seems to be one of the most accurate worldwide leaders in terms of putting together accurate valuations on clubs and players. So we were having this conversation last week about what the value of football will be after COVID-19 and how much the transfer market would be affected. I naively thought that perhaps it wouldn't be affected that much, that maybe it would plateau for a little while, but it would continue to rise in terms of transfer fees over the next couple of years. Not going to happen. And I probably should have known that. So the Football Observatory, if we go through a couple of the clubs, because Tottenham is one of them, Tottenham's squad value would fall from €787 million to €560 million. And that is a more significant percentage drop than the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal at this point, 28.8% of a valuation drop. So these numbers take into account expiring contracts, the age of players and recent performance with an aggregated transfer value based on the 20 players with the highest values at each club. So I presume for Tottenham, you've got a couple of old defenders there and their returns are certainly diminishing. And if you take away, say, a 3-6 month period from football, that is a huge amount of value that you've taken out of your team. And it kind of works at the other end of the scale as well. I'd imagine with young talent that clubs would want to sell on, that that's also a huge chunk taken out of their potential development as well. So it works both ways. But Tottenham, Jared, looks like are going to suffer quite a bit. There's
my line's a bit flaky here, Alan, so I don't know if you're actually able to hear me. But I don't think that this matters that much for those football clubs, because again, this was always a paper value. There's probably some accountancy procedures in the background that it has some impact on value of contracts being written off, but you would expect that most of that is done against salary and that they're putative transfer value, because you don't know the value of a player until you actually put them on the market, and you don't know if a player has any value until you find one or two teams who are actually bidding against each other for them. A lot of those contracts probably have release clauses, and those release clauses are what they work off. So it will be interesting to see if this fall in transfer values has a significant impact on clubs. Ultimately, what's going to matter for the clubs is, can they play games on TV and can they fill their stadiums? And obviously, Spurs make loads of money from match day revenue, I think the second highest in England, in English football. So that's hugely important for them. And playing these games behind closed doors is the first thing, because if they don't get those games played, they're going to have to give money back to Sky. And if that happens, then, you know, obviously some deal will be worked out so that the clubs don't go to the wall, because that doesn't make any sense. But like, that would be a chronic supply, a chronic shortage of money in the market. And we know what that leads to. That leads to teams suddenly having to pick players from the reserve team and put them in.
Yeah, like, I should state that these figures are all based on the assumption that football will not resume by the end of June. And you're kind of interested in what the individual transfer values will be. So Paul Pogba, for example, if football were to not resume by the end of June, his transfer value would be halved from €65 million to €35 million. So if there's any clubs kind of sitting on assets thinking to themselves, right, summer 2020, we're going to cash in on this guy, you've made a bad business move. It's not your fault, but you made a bad business move.
On the other side of that, Jadon Sancho is one of those players we wanted to talk about, because he's been heavily linked with Manchester United, kind of unofficially has made it clear that that's where he's going, because he's mates with Marcus Rashford, according to the story that I read this morning. So it must be true. But maybe Dortmund are looking at this going, well, we're not going to get any value for our assets right now. We're going to keep the band together and we're going to have one of the best young teams that the world has ever seen.
that's one way of looking at it, definitely. Like,
we were saying we wanted that to happen. We got Uli Hesse on the line to go, can please tell us, is it going to happen? Look at how amazing this team is. Keep them together, Uli. Do what you can. And now, you know, he brought the plague and here we go.
Are we in a situation at the moment, though, that Dortmund's two of their front three are just so ripe for picking at the moment between Haaland and Sancho? I don't want to say they're a sure thing because nothing is a sure thing in football, but I can't remember a duo and a team in recent memory who are as close to being a sure thing. That I wonder if a lot of football clubs, say, for example, somebody with the financial prowess of Real Madrid, they could actually look at their accounting books and say, right, this is obviously a huge gamble if we were to spend 120 million euro on a player now, given the current financial crisis that the world is going to face. But do we just roll that dice? Do we like it? That would be like paying, I don't know, 200 million quid a year ago, paying 100 to 120 million this summer. And by the sounds of things, 120 million euro might be a bid that gets accepted by Borussia Dortmund for Jadon Sancho. The other kind of factor in it, though, is the fact that Sancho is going to be looking for a big wedge in his wages. He could be like, there's talks of a deal that could see him earn up to 400 grand in pounds a week. That's, I guess, incremental over the next couple of seasons. Like, there is so much hype around this guy that I actually think that there might be one or two footballers who might give us some sort of illusion that football is immune from the COVID recession that is going to happen or that is already happening. I think it might be just on the lower downscales that perhaps this happens. Maybe older guys going into their last contract won't be able to get the wage they want. But maybe immediately the big transfer fees might stick the way they are, and it might just take one little anomaly over the next couple of months for it to be downgraded. I don't know is the important thing here, but I just have a hunch that given Sancho and Haaland's quality, there may be an exception made despite the dwindling finances available to some of these clubs.
Well, let's wait and see. I can't see that. So Haaland's going to stay around anyway. That was the information that we had the last time we had a conversation with anybody who was German-based, that they think that there's no prospect of him leaving in the summer. Sancho is the one that they expect and did expect to leave. And, you know, if you were advising him, you might advise him to sit out for a year and see exactly what happens and let the world recover a little bit from the biggest shock that it's had since the Great Depression. So let's talk a little bit about some of the other rumours that are going and doing the rounds at the moment. Sadio Mane to Madrid, that's a rumour that won't go away.
Yeah, it's been something that's been doing the rounds for quite some time now. Like, according to yesterday's reports, Madrid might well be interested in Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang before they go for Sadio Mane. So perhaps he's second on their list. Like, I wonder how this connected the whole Jadon Sancho situation is to this. Like, are Liverpool still in the mix for Jadon Sancho? Like, you mentioned it's going to be Manchester United if you read into the fact that he is mates with Marcus Rashford. I personally wouldn't read a whole pile into that myself. He's not going to go back to Manchester City. And I think that if he makes a move to the Premier League...
Why would he not go back to Man City?
I think that there is more of a chance of, if Mane goes to Real Madrid or if he joins Manchester United, Jadon Sancho will be an absolute banker to start in the front three for a top Premier League club and get all the individual glory that his talents deserve. Like, it's kind of a scary thing to say. Like, is there a guarantee that Bernardo Silva and Raheem Sterling and perhaps even Leroy Sané are all just going to get benched consistently for Jadon Sancho? Because it's not even a matter of falling into a team and getting regular game time. Like, this guy's stats, when you look at it, he's prepared to explode over the next couple of years. Like, I know it's an easy thing to say with a lot of footballers, but like, you compare Sancho's stats to Ronaldo's at his age and Messi's at his age, and they're better in terms of goal scoring. Like, this is a guy who needs to go out and be an absolute starter for a team next season. For me, that could be a Liverpool team that has lost one of their front three, or it could be Manchester United. They're the two options. I'm not sure Manchester City, and as bizarre as it sounds, I'm not sure they actually give him the guarantee of that. So that's why not, in my opinion.
I think that if he's that good, Manchester City obviously have first option on him. They must be looking at it going, we're going to get rid of some of the other players here. They're not as dominant as we want them to be, and we want to be the best team in the world. And we're going to let Manchester United or Liverpool have access to this guy instead of us having access to him. and he's actually going to make our team better from the get-go. I mean, look, it's a dark horse at this point. I can certainly see a scenario where he ends up at Manchester City, and that would be the right thing for Manchester City. Whether or not it's the right thing for him, I suppose we'll have to wait and see. What about Jack Grealish? Obviously, been in the news over the last 24 hours on.
Yeah, Jack Grealish. So last week, if we spool it back to last week, he had maybe the week before he released a video telling everybody to stay indoors. But unfortunately, sometimes if you give advice, it's hard to follow your own advice. And he was out and about over the course of the weekend and very sillily then was involved in a car crash, which was kind of the smoking gun, which allowed people to post a photograph on social media where he was wearing one flip-flop and one slipper or something like that. And he was standing beside his Range Rover after being involved in the crash, clearly had broken his lock-in and had gone out to some sort of COVID party, I want to say. So he had to release another video this week, and here's what he said.
Hi, everybody. I just want to do a quick video message just to say how deeply embarrassed I am by about what has happened this weekend. I know it's a tough time for everyone at the moment, being locked indoors for so long, and I obviously just got a call off a friend asking to go around to his, and I stupidly agreed to do so. I don't want anyone to make the same mistake that I did, so I obviously urge everyone to stay at home and follow the rules and the guidelines of what we've been asked to do. I know for a fact that I'll be doing that in the near future now, and obviously, like I said, I urge everyone to do the same. I hope everyone can accept my apology and we can move on from this. And hopefully, obviously, in the near future, we can all be out enjoying ourselves again once this is all boiled over. So cheers, guys, and thank you.
I know for a fact I'll be doing that in the near future. Maybe not immediately. And at some point, I will obey the lockdown that I'm recommending everybody be involved in. If you're a club who was thinking of signing Jack Grealish, what is your take on this situation, Owen?
I don't think it makes much of a difference, does it? Like, footballers
it makes him
do...
cheaper.
Say that again?
It makes him cheaper. You're like, okay, this is great. This is like good for us because we're going to get him for 10 million less or 20 million less. Suddenly, the market for his services is a bit depressed. We're like, oh, you know, I can't give you the 60 million we were going to give you. Look at what's going on here. And he did that thing. He had to do that apology video. That's not really our brand, is it? You know, our brand is about selling tractors in Ukraine. Can't be having that.
I wonder if Aston Villa have actually made plans budget-wise for next season being based on a championship club. And they're actually best placed to enter into the COVID recession, because if the season is called off, they'll be a Premier League club and they'll have next season's television money and they'll be in and around the same finances that they would have been had they been a top tier championship club. And actually, they managed to keep Jack Grealish. So I wonder if this whole thing works out just really well for your beloved Aston Villa. Like, I would say, first piece of advice is if you're going to go out to a COVID party, don't get involved in a car crash afterwards, especially if you're a professional footballer. Second of all, I thought there was this, I'm fully sure that there was this impression out there about Jack Grealish that there was a certain change in his personality over the last couple of years. He'd become a more mature human being. This kind of just strikes me as a little bit immature, doesn't it? And I think I'm a little bit surprised actually that Jack Grealish has actually been involved in something like this. That's obviously on me for being a little bit naive, and in fairness, I'm sure there's plenty I don't think it's a stain on his character or anything. I just think it's pretty silly. I think it's stupid, especially when you are somebody of that profile to go and do something like that. But yeah, I think it probably actually cheapens his image and perhaps even cheapens the asking price if he is going to make the move this summer.
It's not going to be the last apology video that we see the lock situation. It's 3 minutes past nine here this morning on OTBM. If you've missed anything of the show already, you can catch it back on our YouTube channel or the OTBAM podcast stream, where every show is fully timestamped. So plenty of AM podcasts worth checking out from the last few days. Keith Andrews was brilliant last Friday. Dr. Noelle Healy was talking about being in the ICU in a children's hospital at the moment in the middle of the crisis. She's obviously a four-time All-Star, a Footballer of the Year, a four-time All-Ireland winner with the Dubs. Dermot Ling yesterday, really thoughtful about maybe connections between the Ash dieback and how our preparedness for that might actually prepare us in a weird way psychologically for what's coming next with obviously a much bigger situation. You'll also find each podcast at the Classic Game Club in a handy YouTube playlist and also up on the OTB Podcast Network. Just search for Highlights from Off the Ball wherever you get your podcasts. We're not finished yet. We're going to be right back with the Crabby Quiz. It's a doozy straight after this.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
They had one more day to rest. We were really in trouble. Really in trouble to build the team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Oh, sweaty palms. Of course, you guys know what it's like, but... That was nervy.
The OTB Brief, online every morning from 7 a.m. on offtheball.com, the Go Loud app, and everywhere you get your podcasts.
OTB AM.
Chris Martin.
Oh, you're kidding me!
September.
Kyle Lafferty.
Are you joking me?
Is that right?
I know! Is that right?
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome along to the shoutiest segment on Irish radio and a multitude of online platforms. It is the scintillating, it is a stupefying, it is a spendido crappy quiz. Every Tuesday and Friday, we pit three of Team Off the Ball up against each other in our quiz of sporting factoids. It's kind of, what is it, two-fifths of the way through the week and at the end of the week as well. Our first contestant tonight, allow me to welcome tonight's contestants, of course. Our first contestant tonight misses nothing about playing GEA. He doesn't need organized training, I should say, to video himself performing dummy solos and then watching it back on loop. Give it up for lockdown legend Tommy Rooney.
Hi, folks.
Woo!
Did you do
the kicking more points now, Tommy?
No, I'm going to have to make makeshift goals somewhere. A pair of trees or electrical lines in the road or something like that within my 2 kilometer radius. There's no more pitches up for grabs.
Oof.
That's unfortunately.
Is Tommy Rooney kicking points not an essential service?
I mean, it is, obviously.
Depends on the type of point, doesn't it?
Those frontline workers need to be entertained somehow, Tommy.
Yeah.
Keep them going. The outside of your boot can only entertain so many people, I guess. Our next contestant is missing his trips to the United Kingdom quite a bit at the moment. It was the one moment of the week where he could feel like George Clooney and up in the air, racking up air miles, sitting in fancy lounges and watching the clouds go by. Give it up for the beast of Ballyhornis, Nathan Nate Dog Murphy.
That's true. My one day of peace and quiet per week, gone.
It is a shame. It is a shame. We feel it for you. Our final contestant today was quite enjoying lockdown and the absence of Kildare GAA heartbreak in his life. That was until Sunday night when he sat down to watch the 1998 All-Ireland football final. If you live in the north side of Dublin and your local off-license is out of red wine, you know why. Give it up for Ger Gilroy.
Thanks, Owen. But I got to get my revenge. We're going to watch the trilogy of defeats that Tyrone inflicted on Kerry in the noughties next.
We can look at the 86 final as well, potentially. What's with the hat? Is it just... I guess it has taken a bit of a turn, you know. The heat wave was only ever going to last so long.
I've been out doing my recommended 20 minutes of exercise within my 2K radius, and I came back all sweaty. So rather than inflict that on the viewers / the listeners, I decided I would at least dress up for the occasion. And also, having watched the 98 final, I'm strictly collars up from now on in all public appearances.
Who recommended only 20 minutes?
That was the UK recommendation.
Maybe it's half an hour, is it?
No, it's just get out once a day. Or at least once a day, is it?
I did half an hour anyway. I did 27 minutes. There's a cycle you can do around here for cycling because my hips are too old. Have you been doing the Joe Wicks stuff? Like Joe Wicks tore my groin. Oh, I couldn't sit down for a shite without pain.
Jeez.
I was like,
he's
what?
A terrible man.
What? I've done one of them and I didn't do this morning's because obviously I was on air. But on Friday mornings I'm not on air, and I did Fridays, and but you have to do it with the kids, otherwise the kids get bored and they won't do it.
Oh my god, they get bored. Like clearly he's very good at what he does, but like we're 2 minutes in and the kids are nah. Seems like a lot of effort.
Yeah, it is.
I sincerely hope there isn't any small print in the government guidelines where it says it is 20 minutes, because you just outed yourself.
I think
police are coming.
They've got other stuff to worry about, right?
No, absolutely not. Tracking down the guy who's gone for a 30-minute cycle in a 2-kilometer radius is absolutely the guy they want to chase down. Right. The format of this week's Crappy Quiz will be questions on the year 2001 for four rounds, and then we're going to quiz you on any year for the fun free magic number round, and also the slip inside of trivia, which is the rapid fire round. You can podcast go on.
I kind of like the way this is going. You did 99 last week, and then 2000, and now 2001.
Mad, isn't it?
So, Jesus, what's going to happen Friday?
98.
Study time. It sounds like maybe Tommy has prepped for 2001.
I absolutely have not. I have not, but I might do it for 2002. I am saying that because the Quizmaster could mix it up. He should mix it up.
2002 should be a Saipan special. Nothing but Saipan. I can't believe. I'll tell you, this crisis hasn't reached full-blown crisis yet in Ireland because no one has turned to Saipan and thought, yeah, now's the time to bring out everything we can about Saipan, like a full Saipan week.
From May 22nd, Ger.
On all of the off-the-ball platforms. We're going to actually wait until the day itself. That's a good idea, Tommy.
A live reliving.
I think we're giving away our plans, lads.
We could do a live reliving and could get actors to voice. Whoever wants to revoice their role in it can do it. So, you know, Kev can be Kev, Lee Carsley can be Lee Carsley, Kelly can be Alan Kelly.
Jim Carrey would be Kevin Kilbane.
And also, I thought Kev was more a silent role.
Oh,
well, he could just be. He didn't. He never. He did. What? That kind of stuff.
The 2002 week is coming your way very, very soon on Off the Ball channels. But today it is 2001 on the Crappy Quiz. You can podcast the Crappy Quiz on offtheball.com or on the Go Loud app. You can give us 5 out of 5, please, if you want to give us a rating. And you can send any questions you have via Twitter, DM to myself, or at Off the Ball. Round one, the boring questions round, never multiple choice. Question one for you, Tommy. 2001 was an almost great year for your beloved Meath as they lost the All-Ireland football final to Galway. They absolutely hammered Kerry in the semi-final, though, with Kerry scoring how many points in that game?
5.
Correct. Good answer.
First game I was at in Croke Park.
Was it? And yeah, you didn't get to go to the final.
I can put it on the record. I actually didn't get to go to the final. I can put it on the record that I did not ole, ole, ole at the end of the game, as some of the Meath fans are doing. And I'm not sure I know anyone who was saying ole, ole, ole. And yes, I didn't get to go to the final. Two of my cousins went to the final, Paul and Brendan, and they had no interest in football. They sat on the floor of Croke Park and played card games as the game was going on. Broke my heart.
Wise man. But sure, you didn't want to be there, Tommy. They got annihilated, and rightly so. You're telling me you did no research in the 2001 All-Ireland Football Championship, and yet you knew how many points Kerry scored in the All-Ireland Football Semi-Final?
First game I was at in Croke Park. How could you forget something like that?
I wish you weren't a liar, Tommy.
Meade 2-14, Kerry 1-5.
Wish you weren't a liar, Tommy.
John McDermott and Ollie Murphy scored the goals for Meade. Mike Frank Russell scored a goal for Kerry.
All this shite you looked up.
Yeah, close the Wikipedia page there, Tommy.
Lads, it's the first game I was at in Croke Park. Like, what was the first game you were at in Croke Park, Nathan? 96 All-Ireland Final?
96 All-Ireland Final.
There you go. I say you remember
it. I remember it well. Mayo lost.
Tommy, ask you how to the number of points a team scored is a tough question, a very, very tough question. And then you follow it up with the point scores. We're hugely suspicious at this point, I think it's fair to say. Alarm bells are ringing in off the ball towers.
The first game I've got accused of cheating before.
You've got a history of cheating on this quiz.
No, I've been accused of cheating before in this quiz.
Backed.
First game I was at in Croke Park. That's it.
Okay.
All right. Let's see how this develops.
Question one for you, Nathan. Who won the Cheltenham Gold Cup in 2001?
For God's sake. Say yes to Brack, Nathan. Hey, no impressions.
Wait, come on.
No, it wasn't.
Come on. Am I back?
It's only easy because I knew it.
Come on, TikTok.
2001.
I thought the line went out there. He was taking so long.
Stop talking. You're distracting me. 2001.
Say Istabrak. Come on.
No, I'm not going to say Istabrak. Istabrak didn't run in the Gold Cup. It was the Gold Cup, yeah.
Hey.
It was the Gold Cup, yeah.
What?
Seymour Business.
No. Anyone?
Best Mate?
No.
Best Mate?
No.
It was before Best Mate's time.
The answer was no one. The festival was cancelled due to foot and mouth.
Ah, bullshit! Oh! That is
bullshit. That's the best question of all time.
2001. 2001.
Oh, coronavirus. Coronavirus. Oh, yeah, now they heard it. It's
Nathan, you got screwed, man.
Oh, that is an outrage.
Oldest meme on the internet this week, Nathan. Great question. That was great.
I can tell you, not much happened in 2001 except for 9/11 and foot and mouth. And when it comes to stuff that happened in a sporting context, foot and mouth is by far the most important thing. Although there is one other thing which you'll get to in a moment. Question one for you, Ger. Liverpool won their last UEFA Cup to date in 2001. Which Spanish side did they beat in the final?
So easy.
Alaves.
Oh, correct.
Woo-hoo!
Alaves.
5-4.
5-4 indeed, yeah. 1-1-0 is this.
I'll tell you a terrible story about the night of 2001 UEFA Cup final.
You've done some research here.
Go on, Nathan.
So I was in college in Galway, and it was a Wednesday night. So obviously I went out to enjoy myself and watch the UEFA Cup final, and may have enjoyed myself a little bit too much. May have started a bit too early. So the game going to extra time did me no favours, to the extent that all I saw was a Alaves player heading the ball into the back of the net. I stormed out of the pub in anger at what I'd just seen. And it wasn't until I woke up the next morning with the most raging hangover that I realised that actually Liverpool had won. And it was an Alaves own goal.
That's great.
Who was the Alaves striker that scored all the goals?
No idea.
Who is somebody famous? Anyway, go on.
Round two is the Jason McAtee round. Without question, the best thing that happened in Irish sport in 2001 was the fact that Ireland stayed on course for World Cup 2002 qualification. This round will test your knowledge on that famous day on Lansdowne Road when McAtee sunk the Dutch. Tommy, question two for you. Who was the Netherlands captain on the day?
Philip Cuckoo?
Correct. He's on a roll.
I hear.
Thank you.
He's totally looked that up.
Like, these are the years that formed me as a sports fan.
I don't know. It seems that it does seem very just looked up. The speed. Captain is not
Philip
easy
Cuckoo
question.
Is the captain. Yeah. No. Oh. It's kind of it's almost irrelevant in some ways.
I was going to ask you
maybe there were better questions. Go on.
Yeah, maybe. Nathan, who got the assist for McAteer's goal?
I knew that is what you were going to ask.
Come on, that's easy.
I was like, oh my God, I can't think of it.
Is it easy?
It has to be Roy Keane. Gary Kelly, Roy Keane. McAteer's to help himself. It's a trick question.
I'm not going to answer now because it's sort of provocation. Let Jair answer this one since he knows, and I'll answer the next question.
Is Philip Cuckoo? Come on, Nathan, you know the answer. He's wasting time.
Sorry, this is nonsense that I have to listen to this bullshit.
Come on, give me
an
answer.
Do you want to pass the question on to me, and I will answer it? Do you want to swap questions?
No. We'll swap questions. Yeah, swap questions. We swap questions.
Can they do that?
No. Absolutely not.
But he's been putting me off.
Come on, give me an answer. Stop whinging.
Roy Keane.
Woohoo! Who is
Steve Finnan, baby. Come on.
It is Steve Finnan.
You must have known that. It's Steve.
Coming from Roy Keane.
Yeah, I know.
Gary Kelly gets sent off. He's playing right back. He should have been in the team in the first place. The ball gets whipped across the goals. McAteer's hiding left wing. I can't believe you didn't know. And your beloved Liverpool and all. Come on, let's go.
Sure. Who was the oldest player that started for Ireland on the day?
Oh, balls.
Oh, come on, Jared. It's easy. It was Kevin.
Steve Staunton.
Correct. Steve Staunton.
Yes, it was easy.
Right, good stuff. 2 points for Jared, 2 points for Tommy, 0 for Nathan at the moment, but you will score in this round.
0 points. 2 football questions.
I knew something like this would happen.
Nathan, don't worry. He brought back the fun-free magic number around just for you after your whinging last week.
Yeah, and it's good. Still here. It's still here today as well, Nathan. But in the meantime, round three is the very, very easy movers and shakers round. 2001 seems like a long time ago, but the transfers are memorable, and these questions should result in 1 point for each of you. The fact that I've resorted to transfers should probably tell you how much memorable sport actually took place in 2001. Question three for you, Tommy. Leeds United purchased which fresh-faced striker from the exotic climes of Serie A, costing the club £12.5 million in 2001?
There's obviously a multiple choice here, is there?
No.
No. Tommy's pretending he hasn't read this up as well.
I feel like it's a trick question. Say it one more time.
Leeds United purchased which fresh-faced striker from the exotic climes of Serie A, costing the club £12.5 million. A lot of money in 2001.
I'm thinking it's a... I'm not drawing a blank on one of our strikers' career paths. I can't think of when he played with them. Was it Mark Viduka?
No.
Robbie Keane. Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. I had Robbie. I think
he knew that and he got it wrong on purpose.
Yeah, he did.
He was like he was reading Robbie Keane off the screen there and he went, "Oh, I can't do that, it'd be too obvious."
I bottled it.
Question three for you, Nathan. Speaking of Italy, which manager left Serie A in January 2001, paving the way for a memorable stint in international management?
Say that again.
Speaking of Italy, which manager left Serie A in January 2001, paving the way for a memorable stint in international management?
Jeez, you've got some hint there.
Sven-Goran Eriksson?
Correct. Sven-Goran Eriksson. I expected all these three to be answered within a second. Jer, the easy question for you. Question three. On July 12th, 2001, Manchester United broke the British record transfer fee by signing whom?
Jer was too busy marching to know anything that happened that day.
Hey! Rio Ferdinand?
No, a year too soon for Rio Ferdinand. It was...
Juan Sebastian Varane.
Correct. Varane. So Nathan closes the gap in that round. It is 1 point for Nathan, two for Jer and Tommy.
How about you get a pen and paper?
You will for round five, but your favourite round is up next, Nathan. Round four is the other stuff that's not sport that happened in 2001 too round. So this
there's an extra round, right?
Yeah.
Right. More rounds the better for me.
Compromise. Question four for you, Tommy. 2001 was the year the iPod was launched. How much did it cost at the time in US dollars? I will accept $50 either side.
Oh man, the iPod. Like, it hadn't been on the market yet. Just trying to clock up my maths here.
Are you like talking to an Alexa or talking to somebody giving clues?
He is. Schieffer's offside there, Owen,
googling frantically.
Yes.
That's good thinking. $350.
Oh, you just about get it. It was $399.
So I will accept.
If only I'd gotten Robbie Keane, I'd be flying.
Nathan, this is my favourite question in the entire quiz today.
Oh, great. I'm delighted.
Actually, no, sorry, Cheltenham was. This is my second favourite question. Glenn Rowe.
Can I say something? It's okay.
Glenn Rowe was pulled off air in 2001 after 18 seasons on our television screens. But can you name the television show that replaced it on Sunday nights? It was a show about a fictional GAA club called Kildoran with the senior team coach played by Sean McGinley.
Great question.
The questions I've got are absolutely ridiculous.
We all remember it, Nathan.
That's pretty hard, unless it's very obvious, in which case it might be.
Oh.
I can't think of it either, but it's a great question.
I have no idea.
I'll give you multiple choice because I...
Here, what's Gilroy doing now?
No! No!
What are you doing?
Whoa. No, it can't be.
What's Gilroy doing? It's 4-1.
Frantically.
Hold on.
Frantically,
he's in the quiz lock.
Frantically, why would I be Googling your question?
You're just getting in ahead and 2001, have it up.
I could definitely see Jared fiddling or something there on his keyboard to the side of the screen.
Excuse me. Excuse me.
You were looking off screen and you were flicking, you were typing away there. Nathan is not getting multiple choice here.
Multiple That's choice, great.
No way, because you'll trigger it.
Shut up.
You'll give it to him straight away.
Was it off the post, sideline ball, or on home ground?
On home ground.
Correct.
Come on. Why are you giving him a point?
That is a joke.
Because, like, let's face it. Like, do people actually remember that, or was it just me who remembered that TV show?
I remember. Well, I
nobody on home ground. Yes, obviously now.
No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. All right.
And the made-up names off the post, like it was called off the ball, yeah. On the ball, or on home ground.
Owen, that was a low point for the quizmaster right there.
Yeah.
Jerry, what are you? Jerry, hold on. What are you looking at off screen?
This is a family show, Tommy. Jerry, The Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring came out in 2001. What is the name of Viggo Mortensen's character?
Viggo Mortensen plays Aragorn.
Correct. At long last, it's a character question. Right. We'll stop with those eventually. So the scores after round four are Jer on 3, Nathan on 2, Tommy on 3. Round 5 is the fun free magic number round. Contestants get 3 points for getting the number exactly right. Go get your paper if you need to get it. If no one manages that, the nearest contestant who doesn't go bust gets 2 points. The second closest gets 1 point. Again, I'm going to say that we can only accept the answer that's written on your paper. I'm also going to have to ask for your pens once the music ends. So if you don't mind, whenever Nathan is back, give us the following number. The number of Champions League medals won by Lionel Messi, plus the number of teams in the NFL, plus the number of All-Irelands won by Tyrone in senior football, plus the number of teams still left in this year's Champions League. Your 30 seconds expire when Sinatra sings Bright Shiny Beads. So, I'm going to need the number of Champions League medals won by Lionel Messi, the number of teams in the NFL, the number of All-Irelands won by Tyrone in senior football, plus the number of teams still left in this year's Champions League. Pot them all up and give me a number. Time is almost up, lads. All right, pens down. Pens down. Jared, what have you got? Okay.
59.
Can you hold up your paper? 59. 59. Tommy, you got 31, was this?
I got 32.
32, Nathan.
52.
What? Tommy gets the points because it's 51. The two lads both went bust.
No!
Woo!
I changed from 50 last minute.
Right, so let's go through this. The number of Champions League medals won by Lionel Messi.
Four.
4. 06, 09, 11, 15. The number of teams in the NFL.
32. 16.
32, correct. The number of All-Irelands won by Tyrone. The number of teams still left in Champions League?
12.
12, correct. So that brings you to...
What did I do wrong?
How can I manage?
You carry the one. There's no carrying a one.
So 4 plus 32 is 36. Plus 3 is 39. Plus 12 is 51. 1951, Nathan, gets you again. When in doubt, just write down 51.
I added it all up wrong.
Yeah, so I'm claiming the trauma of the times that out of my brain. I can't do simple maths.
I had all the right answers.
The score at the end of that round is Tommy 5, Jer 3, Nathan 2. Right, on to the final. Our winner tonight will
Gilroy bottle it.
Our winner tonight will be decided.
I'm winning. How could Gilroy bottle it? I'm winning.
Are you? What's the score?
5-3-2.
Oh.
It's a land of opportunity. You can bottle whatever you like. Our winner tonight will be decided in the round that separates the men from the boys, the Steph Currys from the Steph Cluxons. It's a no theme in particular, ridiculously easy rapid-fire round. The score you get in this round will be added to your score in the previous round. There will be 40 seconds for everyone to answer from the same set of questions. We're going to start with the highest number of points. That's you, Tommy. Then onto the person in second. That is you, Jer. And then onto the person in last. Remarkably, it's Nathan. If you get a question correct, I'll ask you another question and keep asking you questions until you get one wrong. Once you get a question wrong, I move on to the next person. And your incorrect answer also means the deduction of 1 point. Tommy, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Tommy, your time starts now. Name the women's champion at Wimbledon last year. Too pass. Long.
Gone.
Simona Halep. Jer, after Old Trafford, which Premier League stadium has the largest capacity?
The Emirates.
No, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Nathan, name the only Irish club captain in the Premier League.
James Coleman.
Correct. Name the Munster hurling champions.
Cork.
No, Limerick. Pass. Name the Leinster hurling champions, Tommy.
Galway.
No, Wexford. Name the NFL commissioner, Jer.
Roger Goodell.
Correct. What country did Dwight York play football for?
Trinidad and Tobago.
Correct. What club does Chris Wilder manage?
Watford.
No, Sheffield United. And I think that's done you out of the win.
No, there's one more question.
There isn't.
No.
We are like 46 what? Seconds in. Let me just tot these up. Jer, you are still on three. Tommy.
On three.
Is on three. Nathan is still on two. So we have a tie between Jer
come
and Tommy.
No, I'm not a lame. I got two right, one wrong. I got
two right, two wrong. That went on there.
Chris Wilder screwed you over, even though it was late. I had started the question, so I finished it. Right, tiebreaker.
No, that's not a rule.
Tiebreaker. It is. In all great quiz
shows. You're a bollocks.
I live by Deanne Robinson.
It's a crappy quiz. It's a crappy quiz, not a great quiz show. It's a crappy quiz. You are not back in. You managed to bottle it.
Okay, if it is Tommy versus Jer in a tiebreak, Tommy wins the coin toss. So well done to you, Tommy. Do you want to go first or second?
I can honestly never remember where to go here.
First time
second,
first.
Right? Second.
Correct. Okay, Tommy. Oh, sorry, Jer. How many Ireland caps? Jer, how many Ireland caps does Darren Cave have?
Darren Cave. How many Ireland caps, Alexa, does Darren Cave have? Darren Cave has 12.
12. Tommy, what are you going for?
I was going to say that exact number, but I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say...
Well, that'd be stupid.
Darren Cave has... And it wouldn't be stupid if it's exactly the right answer.
True.
Darren Cave has 13 caps.
He's got 11. Jer wins.
Oh! Hey, boom!
Good guess.
What
a guess.
Oh, good man, well Darren Cave. Jer. I never doubted you. You should have many more.
Oh, that's a sickener.
Congratulations.
Tell me about it.
Gilroy champion at last.
I'm back, bitches.
That is it. Tuesday's crappy quiz in the books. What are you going to say, Tommy?
When are we doing our 2002
rifle,
quiz?
Jesus Christ. Rifle order resumed.
2002. Lots of Saipan coming your way on Tuesday morning on OTB AM. That's the crappy quiz for this week. Hit us with any questions you have. Congratulations, Mr. Gilroy.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.